The gurus of how to are here, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell. They visit us once a month to talk about home repair and related matters and take your calls and try to stump you with a quiz. And have I left anything out?
No.
We're
trying to show, you know, how to uncap the bottle or unbottle the cap, whatever the case may be.
Okay.
For whatever ails your house.
It seems to me that half the time you visit, we're talking about air conditioners, and the other half we're talking about what to do with the air conditioners we're not using anymore.
Right.
That's true, too. You try to do that, but sometimes...
So is that what's happening now? Should we be cleaning our air conditioners and covering them and doing all that sort of stuff?
You bring up an interesting point, because I just did a consult on a co-op in Manhattan where everyone else in the building in the wintertime are extremely comfortable, except for one woman who lives on the top floor on the northeast corner, which is traditionally the coldest part of the building because it's the morning sun, so it never heats up. It's in Manhattan. It's probably shaded by other buildings, and it's facing north. And she insists that the reason that she's not getting enough heat is because the heating system's not working, let alone that she refuses to take the air conditioning units out of the windows. Now, one also has to understand that not only is the air conditioning unit itself not really that great at keeping heat in the building. There's not a lot of insulation in the air conditioner itself or in those little accordion-like one level above cardboard fillers that are in the windows. That's the first thing. The other part is that when you install a window air conditioner into a window, there's actually a gap between the upper sash and the lower sash where air and bugs and everything just comes in and out. And so my advice to the co-op and co-op board was, if she starts to complain again this year, say, did you take your air conditioners out? And she says, well, that has nothing to do with it. She says, well, we're not even going to listen to you until you take your air conditioners out. You got to put your foot down. She might be the squeaky wheel, but at some point you got to put your foot down. And my point is that once the season's over, which I'm not sure it's over yet, you got to take them out. It's a pain. There's nowhere to store them. Some buildings, if they're smart, they'll start encouraging that to happen and provide.
But can't you just cover them?
No.
The covering, it works occasionally if the cover comes equipped with insulation on it. Sometimes you have to add more insulation. You got to make it very tight. But even around, if it is a window insert unit, the interface between the air conditioner and the window sash and the side really never fits really perfectly properly. And so what happens is air comes in and out. And besides, air conditioning units have a damper inside that sometimes adds air from the outside so as to replenish the oxygen and air that you have inside the apartment.
So if you want a draft, keep the air conditioner in your window. Now, what about the ones that are in sleeves?
They're much better. They're much better because if it's made for that particular sleeve. Unfortunately, sometimes you get an air conditioning unit that's not made for that sleeve, and it's smaller than the sleeve opening, and you have the same problem you have with a window insert type.
Now, this is also a time you suggest that if you own your own home, you should clean your roof gutters and drains, have your heating system checked, make sure it's working safely. Safely, is that the big issue there, or
yes,
properly?
Safely is part of it, but efficiently, I mean, because of the safety devices that are inherently installed in both gas and oil-fired units, in other words, if an oil-fire unit starts up and it doesn't get ignition within a certain amount of time, it shuts it down, and if you have to go downstairs and reset that button once or twice, it's not working, and you need to call the oil service people for your oil company. If it's gas, if the thermal coupling is broken or something to that effect, and the pilot won't stay lit, if the pilot won't stay lit, don't try jerry-rigging it so it'll light without the pilot, because you're really setting yourself up for a disaster. So these types of equipment, as far as safety is concerned, is not as big a concern with the units themselves. The big concern is with keeping the chimneys clean, and also having the pilots and the burners themselves adjusted properly to not produce carbon monoxide.
So you say that we should check the batteries in our smoking carbon monoxide detectors.
Yes,
you
got to check them in. If you don't have a carbon monoxide detector or a smoke detector or a smoke alarm or something like that, it's time to put it in.
But, you know, the smoke alarms can be really annoying. I have one that every time I even turn on my oven, I get
beeping. Well, where's it located?
It shouldn't be located.
I shouldn't have it on my oven?
No, it shouldn't be.
Well,
actually,
it's in the next room.
Well, it depends on how far away it is and how much moisture. The problem, what you're telling me, is that if it's always going off every time you just boil a pot of water, it's telling me that you're not having great ventilation in your kitchen, which is another problem, which is that every time you turn on your oven or your stove, you're probably putting, at the very least, a lot of carbon dioxide, but at the very worst, carbon monoxide into the air. So that's telling me that you're not having great ventilation. I just want to say that fire detectors...
I have great ventilation. You know why? I never take in my air conditioner from the window.
But just so people know, fire detectors for kitchens, smoke detectors for bedrooms and living areas.
Yeah.
Okay, well... Should we take some calls?
Absolutely.
But first, the quiz. Who's doing the quiz this month?
Let's see.
I'll read today. I haven't read in a while.
All right, go ahead.
What is the other tool besides a trowel that is used to smooth and straighten the surface of wet concrete, plaster, or other material that are in a plastic state?
Mm. Yes.
So it's not a squeegee, and this is not a trowel.
No,
not a squeegee
either.
Not a trowel. It's the same thing that you use even for what they call screen printing. You know, mm-hmm. where you put the ink on it, and you have this thing that goes over. It has that same device. Is the same device we're looking for.
And people will call in. We hope with an answer correct. We hope.
Yes.
And what happens if they come up with the correct
answer? We give them a copy of my book I wrote with George Merlis called Save Energy, Save Money. And this book will really save you money and save energy.
Okay. Well, let's take a call. This one is from Tom from Staten Island.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, fellas. How are you?
Good. What's up?
I live in a four-building co-op on Staten Island.
Mm-hmm.
Each building has approximately the same number of residents, 12.
Mm-hmm.
Yet one of the buildings gets a water bill every 3 months from the city, which is three times that of the other three buildings.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, it's about $4,000 instead of about $1,200.
Mm-hmm.
So we've asked the city for an audit. They sent an inspector around. I don't think he didn't do an audit. He looked at the meter and said, well, it runs. It works. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, obviously, to us anyway, something is very much wrong. I mean, we've been getting these bills for 3 years now. They're just...
Let me ask you a couple questions.
Sure.
Obviously, did they swap the meter out and give you a different meter?
I wouldn't know that.
Okay, no. That's one thing that you might want to ask them actually say, let's just give us a different meter.
Okay.
That might be number one. And if that's the case, then they actually need to give you a refund on the amount that you spend for the last 3 years, which could be great, but I'm not counting on that one because it's usually not the meter. The second thing is has someone actually done the due diligence of going through every apartment and checking toilets and sinks that are running? Because, you know, that's gallons.
That's good. That's hundreds of
gallons. The third thing is to actually have some, if that's been done, and that's easy to do. Anyone, the super or mechanic or even a resident can go through the building and figure it out. That's not hard. The last thing is to actually figure out if there's any underground piping and whether it's ruptured in the ground. And that is a possibility also. And that's probably the hardest thing to figure out. But you can figure out, there can be a way to isolate these different things. It may take a plumber to put in some isolation valves and shut them off, but it is something that someone who has the desire to do could make happen. And one of the ways to make
talking about almost $3,000 a year.
Right.
It seems to me it might be worth it to them.
No, that's a quarter, right?
Quarterly.
Oh, so that's a lot of money.
Yeah, they're spending.
It might be worth a few isolation valves.
Yeah, they're spending close to $12,000 more than the other two buildings. So I think a plumber, you can get a plumber motivated by giving him a percentage of what he saves you.
Yes, that's true, too. But the thing is, can I ask you a question? Do you have flush valves or you have float ball tanks?
That's beyond me, believe me.
Well, I mean, you live in the building, right?
I do, yes.
Yeah, is it a tank where you take the top off of it and there's water? Or is it a flush valve like in public bathrooms where you just hit the thing and it flushes?
Oh, no, a tank.
Tank.
A tank. Well, those are the things that use... If the ball stopper at the bottom doesn't fit exactly perfectly, that could run water. Nobody even knows that it's running, but it runs water very slowly, and that in itself over the years could read thousands of gallons.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you so much. Our number here 829. Oh, gee, I forget all those numbers. 3968. What was it again? 646-829-3985. 646-829-3985. I can't remember my own number. If you want to give us a call, you can also leave us a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Laura on the Upper West Side writes, what are strategies to look for mice and seal up cracks as well as how to get rid of them?
Well, that's first of all, the reason that people get mice is because there's something in their house that is an attractant, either food droppings or some warm corners or something where they can make a nest into. So the idea is to search out where the mice harbor themselves. The second thing is that really house traps really work very, very well, but the best works when you get an exterminator that knows the tricks and knows the kinds of chemicals that he can put around the house in order to prevent the mice and the other vermin from coming back.
Okay, so let's take another call. Laura from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Laura.
Hi.
What's up?
We recently bought a co-op, and I guess I should preface this by saying we didn't have it inspected in any way. We bought it from people we knew, and we have found ourselves in a situation where the toilet is backing up into the adjacent shower.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the question is, or the questions are, what do we do about it to really, I guess, ascertain that that's what's really happening, and then what do we do to fix it?
Well, the first thing I want to say is don't beat yourself up too much about not having an inspector, because, you know, if it was working fine at the time when the inspector would, and one of the things I would do is normally is obviously run the sink, run the shower, and flush the toilet. And if when I was there it wouldn't back up, then I wouldn't notice anything to be a problem. It could be. And I'm assuming this is an older building.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm assuming that what probably happened here is that, you know, the piping was on the edge as far as building up. A crud builds up inside the pipes all the time. And what we have now is a situation where there's a blockage, probably where this in the plumbing tree where all these pipes come together, there's some sort of blockage. And this is how many story building?
12.
12.
We're on 7.
And you're on 7. Does it back up on its own when you don't even flush the toilet?
No.
Okay. So there's obviously a blockage somewhere between on your particular branch of the plumbing tree between there and the vertical riser or drain pipe. So a plumber is going to have to come in. Now, this is a co-op, right?
Right.
So this is actually an issue because it's beyond the walls of your apartment where the building management and maintenance staff would have to take care of this issue. So it's not really your problem per se. Obviously, my responsibility as an inspector would say wouldn't be your responsibility, but it might affect your livability in an apartment, and that's part of the strength that a lot of the things, like I'm doing a co-op in a condo in Long Island, and part of what I do is the roof and the common areas, and they say, why? I says, well, though you're not responsible for it, if the roof is leaking, it's certainly going to affect you. And who wants to live like that, and for how long until they get around to fixing it? So it's the same thing here, where the piping, but I would definitely contact the building management and let them know you're having an issue and that they need to bring in a plumber to clean out the pipes or, at worst, replace the pipes because they're so far gone.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you so much.
No problem. Lots of luck.
Okay. Tiffany in South Orange, New Jersey writes, I have a tankless hot water heater that is 2 years old and working perfectly. Over the weekend, we installed a high-energy washing machine, and the pressure value for the hot water heater started leaking dramatically. Now it's a slow, steady leak, about a drop every 30 seconds when water is running. What's going on, and is there a device that we can install? Reem, the heater manufacturer, says return the washer or call a plumber.
I like that. Don't return our device. Our device is working perfectly.
Sometimes things like that have to be looked at by somebody who's looking for something and then go through the procedure of testing.
But I'm actually going to go simple.
Go ahead.
I think the relief valve might be broken.
That's true, too.
Those relief valves are pressure and temperature. They're actually called temperature-pressure relief valves, and they are affected by pressure or by temperature. They may not be rated. They may not no longer be at the rating that they were manufactured
at. So how do you deal with that?
You call a plumber, and they replaces the relief valve. That's the first thing I would do. Then figure out, because from what I'm thinking here, there's no reason why this should be happening.
Yes.
So I think that let's check out the relief valve if it's starting to spit water.
What you can do, it could be a piece of dirt that's underneath the seat of the relief valve. What you can do is force the relief valve by picking up the lever and let the water flush through it and then close it down and see if it stops.
And the lawyer side of me is going to say to you, please wear long sleeves, clothes, and rubber gloves when you do it to protect yourself.
And have a bucket.
And goggles.
We have some people who
even the suit that the guy has walked on the moon with would even be better. Okay.
Some people have called in with their answers to the quiz, which is, what is the other tool you use besides a trowel that is used to smooth and straighten the surface of wet concrete, plaster, or other materials that are in a plastic state? And let's let's go to a few of them. Mark, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, how you doing?
What do you think it is?
Podger, P-O-D-G-E-R.
No, he's thinking for something you use for parging.
Oh, parging, right. That's a different thing.
No.
No. Oh, okay.
No.
Okay.
No.
I used to be a Podger fan, but I moved on to the pets.
The pets.
Tom from Hell's Kitchen. How are you on the air?
Hi, Tom.
Yes.
Yes. What do you think it is?
I think it's a float.
No.
A float is something, a wooden paddle float. That's in order to make it like a rough finish on the cement. It doesn't. It's not what
that's
we're
for
looking
texturing,
for.
Not for what we're looking for.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to Doug. Hi, Doug from Pelham Park. You're on the air.
Florham Park, New Jersey.
Okay. I'm sorry I got it wrong.
The answer is screed.
How did you know that?
The good hint you gave was the silk screening.
I know. I don't know. I'm sitting here and I go, why is he giving something so close to the answer? I'm with you on this one.
I had float on my mind originally.
Until he gave it away.
but it's great. Yeah, the wooden, 2x4 or something that goes across the top.
Exactly.
Yep.
All right.
Okay. Well, you want to tell him what he'll be getting got it right.
He'll get that book called "Save Energy, Save Money," and hold on until the producer takes your name and address and and we'll mail it out as soon as possible.
Okay. So, Doug, I'm going to put you on hold.
Oh, when we get around to it, don't.
And we're going to take a little break here. We'll be back with the gurus of how to, Alan Larry Ubell, after we take this brief break to tell you some really important stuff. You've been gone such a long, long time. How you gonna fix this broken heart of mine? You've been gone such a long, long time. How you gonna fix this broken heart of mine? Mr. Fix It. How you gonna fix this? How you gonna fix this? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The gurus of how to are here. And we're taking your calls at 646-829-3985. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And Claudia from Montclair, New Jersey, you are on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem. What's up?
Well, I'm on this mission to cut back on my energy costs because I noticed last month my bill seemed unusually high. So I conducted an experiment for the past month, and at the end of the workday, I turn off my computer, unplug the power strip. I even turn off my set box, my cable set box, and unplug that. Mm-hmm. And I kept everything else pretty much the same, the washer, the dryer. And this month, my bill is higher. So I'm just wondering if you have any...
Well, the answer is obviously don't unplug anything.
Things in and out, or...
No, but I think... See, the problem is, and that's a difficult one to do because... as much as our usage overall tends to be pretty consistent, there are anomalies that occur from time to time that throw that off. I've always been, you know, I'm a bit of a geek that way also to to follow my my energy usage. I was monitoring. My thermostat actually has an energy counter on it. And you have to really crunch the numbers, let's say, between degree days and hours on and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And also what your need is. Maybe for last month you were doing something else that was forcing it over, even though you were unplugging all this stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that the plugging in and out is not going to necessarily jump up the cost of any of these devices. Mm-hmm. But I have to say that all the newer devices, like I know that the charger, the wall charger for my iPhone, turns off when it's not on. So, because I could feel it, because it gets warm when I plug it up, when I turn it on, and then when it's finished charging or I unplug it, it gets cool again. So it's not, but the old ones, the old black ones that we had for all our devices, they stay hot all the time. So those are the things you have to look at. If they're all new with energy-saving labels on them, unplugging them is not going to really affect your...
It's only pennies.
Well, no, even unplugging them is not going to make them any less because they're already off.
Yes.
So I'm not sure if... How much did it go up by?
You know, I haven't gotten the bill yet, but I actually went out and read the meter, and it was so much higher than what it read for the previous month, the differential. So I was just sort of stunned.
But the thing is that are you sure that both of your meter readings were actual readings, or were they one was an estimated?
No, they were. That's a great question. And I checked the bill, the previous bill, and it said it was an actual reading.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you got to be very careful how you read the meters because
let me ask you a question.
One dial turns one way, one dial turns the other way.
Is it a dial or a digital?
No, this one is a digital. It flashes you know, like a series of identical numbers flash, and then the actual reading comes on.
Well, as we know in statistics and polling, one month does not a trend make. Okay, so why don't you keep doing it for a while and then get back to me?
Yeah. Okay, Claudia, thank you for calling. And we go now to Teresa in Queens. Hi.
Hi. Good afternoon.
What's up?
I'm calling. I'm interested in refacing my kitchen cabinet. Mm-hmm. So my plan was to go to Home Depot with the measurements, pick pine wood, and have them cut it out for me.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, are you going to put this pine wood on top of the existing cabinets?
Well, I'm going to remove the existing doors and then replace them
Well, how that really works is that you have to take out the existing doors, number the doors, make sure that on the back side or someplace that exactly that the door goes back to the same place as it was before, and then they have to cut and trim that door to the new door, and so that everything goes into the same place. But you got to be very careful of how the hinges or the latching mechanism, because sometimes they have these magnetic latches that if you don't match them up exactly to the cabinet ones, to the door ones, they're not going to work. So there's a lot there's a lot to go into installing kitchen cabinet doors to make them work properly. It depends upon the hinge, whether it's a hidden hinge or an exposed hinge, whether it comes with handles or without handles, and of course what I just mentioned is the latches on how they work.
But I want to say one thing for people who think you're doing this. They actually, if your cabinets that you already have are somewhat of a close to a standard size, they already have manufactured doors that you could swap out your doors. So instead of, it sounds to me that you're having them just cut straight pine, which is going to kind of be boring looking. So they actually do make doors that you can actually reattach.
And most cabinets are
relatively standard sizes.
Built to the same size.
I mean, where the sizes go crazy is actually at the ends where they have to fit in a small cabinet or a slightly larger cabinet. But for the most part, they're pretty standard. And I would do a little bit more research because I personally, just having them cut a piece of square pine out. First of all, the problem with just cutting off a piece of square pine. See, a cabinet door is not just a piece of wood. It's actually a wood with a frame in it to keep it straight. A piece of pine will warp on you.
Yeah.
So I would do a little bit more research on this one.
Thank you, Teresa. Elizabeth from Mineola writes, workman removed a bathroom radiator and then put it back, and now it doesn't give out heat.
Well, if they put, but taking out a rate, it depends upon how they put it back and what kind of.
Well,
balance.
Obviously they put it back in a bad way.
Maybe they put it back incorrectly. Is that what you're trying to tell me here?
Maybe
if it doesn't work, something.
Maybe the valve that they put on, they turned it off while they were working on it, and nobody turned it back on again.
That could be.
It could be that simple.
It could be that simple. It also could be that they never bled the radiator out, so
could
the radiator
be full with air if it's a hot water system.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah,
yeah. And the other thing is that they could have, in the process of removing it, dropped something in the pipe.
That's
that
true.
Caused the blockage.
Right.
Remember, these if it's a hot water system, which is what I'm assuming, is that the amount of pressure running through these pipes is not that much.
It's only about maybe 10, 12, 13, 14 pounds at the very most.
Yes, so there is a little bit of investigation that needs to go on here.
Nancy, Kathy from Greenwich Village. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I had a flood in my apartment while I was away, and when I came
how come
back,
it never happens
I found
when,
damage done to the wall in my living room, and the wall that faces is the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And fixing the kitchen is going to require, I think, taking down the cabinets
mm-hmm.
that are in the kitchen, as well as the sink,
right.
Taking the sink and the dishwasher away from that wall. Is that right?
Yes. Which is really, I have to tell you, is really is not a big a deal as you think it is. It really, cabinets are basically usually held to the wall with about 4 to 6 screws per cabinet. So all they do is unscrew all these screws, pull the obviously empty the cabinets, pull the cabinets off, pull the sink away from the wall, remove whatever affected drywall or plaster is there, and then reinstall it and put everything back. This is basically about a day or two job. We're not talking about building the Empire State Building here. We're talking which only happened in 18 months anyway. But it shouldn't be that big a deal. But it should be done because we don't know what's going on behind. We have a water problem. We could have mold. We could have fungus.
That's what I'm afraid of.
So,
the mold.
Exactly. So I think they need to do a real job here.
Okay.
My super thinks that he can just paint over the visible
and
stuff.
That's usually how supers think. Thank you.
You have to what?
That's how supers think.
How supers think, yeah.
Yeah. Painting fixes everything.
Yeah,
but
they think.
Then,
all right,
then
that's
3 months.
What I thought. I just wanted to make sure that was right.
Okay.
Then 3 months later, the problem reappears.
Well, it all peels off because they didn't really affect the underlying problem. And it also gives you an opportunity with all the cabinets off to go there with a moisture meter, which these days every super seems to own, to see if there's actually water coming through it. So,
Alan, hi, you're on the air.
What's up, Alan?
Hi.
Hello. I have questions about solar panels.
Go ahead.
Solar panels, basically for photoelectric panels for producing electricity.
Solar voltaics, go on.
Now, for determining the strength of the roof, whether they will support the panels and... how would you repair the roof once they're installed?
Okay. As far as the strength of the roof, that would obviously have to be determined by an engineer or an architect to determine the size of your roof rafters and what they're made of and how strong they are. They may have to actually penetrate the roof and go down into the building system. So that's one of the things they would have to do. As far as the roof, once the panels are on, and I've had a lot of time to think about this because I'm thinking about doing it in my house, is that the panels need to be installed at least 18 inches to 2 feet above the roof surface. That way you can always get under the panels to do whatever repairs or replacement you need to do.
That's true, but you got to also know how much the panels weigh and what kind of model they are.
Well,
but,
obviously, that's part of a calculation.
Yeah, the calculation. But, however, there is now on the market a material that is a photovoltaic system that actually is part of the roofing system of the membrane. In other words, all the shingles come off and everything else, and this new kind of panel gets put onto your roof. It is it protects you from the elements, the rain, the snow, and everything else. It acts in that way, but at the same token, it is a photovoltaic panel. And it doesn't require engineering.
I'm not a big fan of that system only because if you don't see it, if it's not a visual thing, so you're on a flat roof or you wouldn't see it anyway,
yeah.
I would never use it because if it's on a low-slope roof, you cannot walk on this stuff.
No, you can't walk on
it. So there's a system in Brooklyn by the Gowanus where they've done the roof in those solar panels, and it looks great, but you can see it. But if you can't see it from the ground, it really doesn't pay to
go that
way.
Well, it works best on a sloping roof or like a pitched roof
right.
or something like that. That's really where it's made for.
Mm-hmm. Now, along these lines, Michael of Brooklyn asks, what's the difference between fibered and non-fibered aluminum roof coating?
Well, the fibrated aluminum coating has this fiberglass inside the as part of the pigment and the vehicle of the aluminum paint, and this holds it together much better. What happens is when you don't have that fibrated material inside the aluminum paint, what happens? You get a condition of allegation, separation. And also, it not only protects the roof from the ultraviolet light and everything else, but it also adds to the longevity of the roofing material because it is a real, true additional membrane.
Susan in Brooklyn writes, our Brooklyn Brownstone Co-op has discovered mold behind the sheetrock in several apartments. The sheetrock is being removed, and we're considering going back to plaster. Does anyone still do plaster walls?
Well, yes, they do, and it's horribly expensive. But the question is, if mold is growing there, why aren't you doing something to stop the mold from growing there first? Because what mold is a symptom of uncontrolled moisture or uncontrolled water. So you have an uncontrolled moisture problem in your wall, and by covering it over with Portland cement, which is the scratch coat of plaster, is not going to get rid of the problem. It's just going to bury it in the wall. And by the way, if you're going to just bury it in the wall, you might as well use Wonderboard underneath, which is concrete drywall, and just smooth that out. It's a lot cheaper. But I think you need to look at the problem.
And we have a caller who has a similar problem. Barbara from the East Village. Hi.
Hi. I live on the top floor of my building. It's a rental unit. Mm-hmm. And it was leaking all summer long. We had a lot of rain. Mm-hmm. at the window frame, essentially. And it got to the point where I couldn't even sleep in that room. The smell of mold and mildew was so strong. Mm-hmm. Finally, when they did go to repair it, they took it down to the brick. Mm-hmm. And the brick underneath the window sill was completely black.
Right.
And I said, this is mold. We have to clean it with bleach. Mm-hmm. And the painter took a wire brush and brushed it, and he sprayed some Tilex on it. And then he started painting it with something that he said would seal it.
Mm-hmm.
And now I've had the windows open. It's been at least a month.
Mm-hmm.
I know that soon I'm going to have to close the windows, take the screens out. And if the room doesn't smell completely like mildew anymore, but near the window and at that spot where they did paint over, I still smell.
Yeah.
Well, you want it?
First thing that I recommend to all people whenever they have a mold or moisture problem, actually, is the first thing you really do need to do is go out and buy yourself a dehumidifier for the space. Because you got to help this process along to get that moisture level down to a reasonable level, 50%, 55% relative humidity. And what I think is going on here is that they painted up way prematurely before whatever, hopefully they fixed whatever the problem was, what was causing the water to leak in, but they didn't give it enough time to really dry out.
Yeah, by putting a coating on top of the brick or whatever happened, though, they've actually sealed the moisture into the wall without getting out.
Now, we've run out of time. Lots of people are calling. Other people have written in. They can contact you?
They can contact me they can go to the website, www.accuratebuilding.com. You can either and write me, larry@ubell.com.
UBELL.
.com. And please include your telephone number because sometimes I'll call because it's easier than writing.
And the company is Accurate Building Inspectors.
Accurate Building Inspectors, right.
And you're going to be back next month.
Where, again, we will show all of New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut how to go forth and fix, save energy, money, and
do it safely.
And I thank the both of you so much for being on our show again.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.